We're in the money. We've got a lot of what it takes to get along. We're in the money. The skies are sunny. Old man depression, you are through. You done us wrong.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, ETF Expert Podcast listeners. I'm a little under the weather this week, but I'm going to give it a go, so forgive me if my voice sounds scratchy or hoarse. But let me begin with the unfounded enthusiasm for the real estate market, because I'm not sure that it's built on a solid foundation. Existing home sales fell in March to its lowest pace since July of 2012. Worse yet, sales have declined for 7 out of the previous 8 months, ever since the Fed signaled its intent to slow the pace of Treasury bond purchases. What about new home sales? Just as ugly. They plunged 14.5% in the latest report, and now backtracking economists are acknowledging that the weather is not the culprit. Clearly, the longer-term rise in mortgage rates and double-digit percentage increases in prices have stretched demand and affordability. What's even more telling about slumping demand is the fact that the weather actually improved in March and mortgage rates actually dropped. Surprisingly, a number of media reports have accentuated the positives. For example, the rate of declining home sales has slowed. Some economists interpreted this fact as a sign of stabilization. Others continued to blame the unusually harsh winter weather, but simultaneously expressed optimism for the spring and summer buying seasons. Still others emphasized a modest uptick in builder sentiment. All is certainly not well with real estate, however. The fact that the average 30-year fixed mortgage is a full percentage point higher than a year ago, coupled with a double-digit year-over-year increase in asking prices, severely strains affordability. In fact, the primary reason that the pace of declines has slowed in the first place is the quarter-point dip in 30-year mortgages from 4.55 to 4.3% in 2014. The drop in interest rates in 2014 may have helped to slow the rate of decline in home sales, but it has not boosted the share prices of home construction companies. Spider Home Builders XHB and iShares Home Construction, ticker symbol ITB, are underperforming broader U.S. benchmarks. Bear in mind that the building subsegment is one of the only rate-sensitive areas that has failed to excite investors in 2014. ETFs for other rate-sensitive investments like Spider Select Sector Utilities, XLU, and Vanguard REIT, VNQ, have outperformed the broader benchmarks, not underperformed them. So do home builders stand a chance when they are down negative 5% this year? Other cyclical rate-sensitive ETFs are surging. Spider Select Sector Utilities, I mentioned already, XLU is up 12% on the year. Vanguard Extended Duration Treasury EDV, ticker symbol, up 11% on the year. And Vanguard REIT VNQ up 10% on the year. All this while the S&P Spider SPY up about 1.5%. Home builders are faltering at the real estate altar. What's more, if lending rates actually rise in the fall, one should not expect things to get any easier for the struggling subsector. Now, on the flip side, what if banks actually began to loosen their lending standards? Buyers might find themselves chasing to get in the game by serving up smaller down payments. In fact, some folks see signs that banks have already loosened the reins. Roughly 17% of today's purchases occur with less than 10% down, and that's the highest level since 2008. But again, home builders are really the ETFs that have lost ground as rates have dropped. Most dividend stocks and dividend ETFs have actually gained ground. And right now, when you talk dividends, one of the biggest corporations by market cap size in the entire world is a huge dividend grower, and that name is Apple. Ironically, right now, all of the Apple alarmists are eating crow for breakfast. They chastised CEO Tim Cook for months. They declared the death of the tech manufacturing giant at every opportunity. And today, the Cupertino-based multinational is asking those same naysayers, how do you like me now? Sentiment changes quickly on Wall Street. The brightest minds now concur that there's a whole lot to love about the top-line revenue beat, the bottom-line profit beat, the 7-for-1 stock split, the dividend hike of roughly 8%, as well as a 50% annual increase in Apple's stock buyback plan. Granted, there are those who have reacted with extraordinary skepticism. They view the company's shock and awe presentation as a pathetic scheme from a team that has run out of innovative ideas. From my perspective, the majority of folks respect when big firms emphasize ways to reward shareholders. Stock buybacks, dividend hikes, historically all tend to work in favor of the owners, not the sellers. Let me caution those that may think I'm enamored with Apple or even Apple products. The truth is I may trade in my iPhone for a Samsung if the upcoming iPhone 6 fails to impress. And those remarkably packed retail stores? Well, I can't prove it, but the traffic at Apple retail outlets appears to be thinning out. None of my concerns make me bearish on the California Corporation's shares, however. If anything, the iEverything producer has increased my confidence in one of my top client holdings, First Trust Technology Dividend, TDIV. Not only is Apple a constituent, but TDIV's 30-day SEC yield of 2.7% is 85 basis points better than the S&P 500 Spider Trust SPY. The majority of my clients are petrified by technology companies because their experiences with the dot-com blowup of 2000. Moreover, the news regarding momentum-based new technology, companies like Facebook, Netflix, Weibo, IPOs 2.0, that has not alleviated those fears. Fortunately, old tech that rewards its shareholders via buybacks and dividend increases are easy to support. For one thing, the ownership of Cisco, Oracle, Apple, Microsoft, and Qualcomm in a single basket enhances diversification. Separately, in an era of ultra-low interest rates, an ETF like TDIV is serving up an admirable income stream. There may be another layer of protection for First Trust's dividend darling. Specifically, it trades at a handsome discount to broader equity benchmarks. Brigny Associates pegs the trailing 12-month PE for the S&P 500 at 17.9. In contrast, TDIV is trading at a more fundamentally attractive 14.5. Some have pointed out that several of the top constituents in TDIV are trading at PE multiples that are below long-term historical averages. It is true that dividend ETFs of all stripes have fared quite well in 2014. That said, are those funds giving you enough exposure to cloud computing like Oracle? Do those funds have a high weighting to International Business Machines, a company that Warren Buffett positively adores? And of course, with Apple getting back in the good graces of the wonderfully colorful Wall Street analysts, how are you profiting from the uptick in this sentiment? For me, First Trust Technology Dividend, TDIV, is a smart step in the right direction. So far this year, some dividend-oriented funds have done exceptionally well. iShares Select Dividend, DVY, up 4.9%. First Trust Technology Dividend, TDIV, up 3.1%. Spider S&P Dividend, SDY, up 3.1% as well. You can also find technical strength with TDIV. The price is above its short-term moving average, the 50-day, as well as its longer-term trend line, the 200-day. Perhaps the only cautionary note is the fact that TDIV has yet to break out to new 52-week highs. Energy and utilities have been the most noticeable sectors on the 52-week high list. Shifting topics, I'd like to talk about global currencies and the war between exporting regions of the world like Japan and Europe and the US and China, all who look to gain a competitive advantage by devaluing their respective currencies. At the tail end of 2013, journalists asked money managers like myself about perceived threats to stocks in 2014. My answer was simple: the possibility for policy missteps in the battle against global deflation might scare away risk takers. In truth, my commentary received a lukewarm reception. Some argued that deflation is a good thing for consumers and a bad thing for corporations. That surprised me a bit, since the well-being of a corporation's profits and revenue streams often drive investor demand. More notably, even a rudimentary review of the Great Depression reveals the insidious trap associated with prices on goods and services spiraling downward. It's one thing to dismiss my ideas with respect to the D word. Then again, central banks clear across the globe typically maintain official or semi-official inflation targets. So if the monetary authorities around the world value inflation targeting, it stands to reason that influential monetary authorities favor a gradual rise in the price of goods and services as opposed to a negative inflation rate. Now, why all the brouhaha about deflation? Do we not have evidence of economic improvement in developed regions like North America and Europe? That depends on the aspects of an economy that one looks at. Last week, Fed Reserve Chair Janet Yellen explained that persistently low inflation poses an immediate threat to the U.S. economy. Investors interpreted the words to mean that the Fed will maintain its massive stimulus via 0% interest rate policy for an extended length of time to fight deflationary pressures. The Spider S&P 500 Trust, SPY, recovered most of its losses from a previous round of aggressive selling in early April. More noticeably, global inflation is at the second lowest level since World War II. This is occurring in spite of $4 trillion in Fed quantitative easing, in spite of the European Central Bank cutting its benchmark lending rate to just 0.25% last year. Worse yet for Europe, inflation currently runs at a paltry 0.5% year over year. Wage growth, also known as wage inflation, is non-existent in Europe, where unemployment hovers near a record high of 12%. In other words, the powers that be in Europe will inevitably act by conventional and/or unconventional stimulus measures to weaken the exchange rate for the stubbornly high euro. Few folks, myself included, expected the Eurozone's common currency to do as well as it has for as long as it has. Over the last year, currency shares Eurotrust, FXE, has maintained a relatively stable technical uptrend. The economies of individual countries that use the euro are being held back by the currency's strength. Specifically, the strong euro makes it difficult for a nation to export its wares. Even a Eurozone participant like Germany, a participant that is not necessarily struggling with deflation, has had difficulty exporting goods because of the euro's vigor. Consequently, Germany's central bank has moved from questioning the legality of asset purchases via quantitative easing QE to embracing the possibility of the unconventional stimulus measure. What does Germany's willingness to consider QE mean? In a similar vein, what does the shrinking balance sheet of the European Central Bank mean to policymakers who recognize the need to facilitate euro depreciation? Well, it means the eventuality of more monetary stimulus from the ECB and a subsequent weakening of the euro. Investors can take advantage of the eventuality by purchasing a currency hedged stock ETF like WisdomTree Europe Hedged Equity, ticker symbol HEDJ, or DBX Tracker's Germany Hedged Equity, DBGR. Whereas the stoutness of the euro over the last year has benefited unhedged European funds like Vanguard Europe VGK and MSCI Germany EWG, right now, going forward, HEDJ and DBGR are the better selections. Now, traders might prefer a more aggressive route. In particular, a trader may wish to take a short position against the euro via ProShares Ultra Short Euro, ticker symbol EUO. Although I prefer to stick with the PE discount for European equities relative to U.S. stocks, an aggressive trader might wait for EUO to pop above a 200-day long-term trend line. A technical price change could signal further depreciation of the currency.
Are you terrified that an economic disaster is near? Are you scared to death that you won't be able to protect your investments? And what about when investments inevitably go back up? Will you know what to do? You've been following me since the 90s. Let me show you how I have protected my clients' assets in the bad times and how I can help you grow your investments in the better times. I will manage your investments the way that I manage my own investments, with my time, tested, smart, and balanced approach. Give me a call at 888-500-GARY. That's 888-500-4279. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at ETFExpert or read my daily commentary at www.etfexpert.com.